From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin.
People are certainly interested in renewable energy resources. And solar is exciting because it's simple to use and it's efficient.
La Crosse-based Dairyland Power Cooperative announced Wednesday that 12 new community solar projects will be springing up this year across western Wisconsin to provide solar power to its customers. It's just one example of the growing demand for renewable power production. And according to Dairyland's business development manager, Craig Harms, provides additional project opportunities for its customers.
Not everyone can take advantage of the residential scale project on their own property, and some people may not want that on their property, and I think they certainly have the opportunity to take advantage of the economies of scale, get the best economics, and still participate with your neighbors in a project that you can be proud of and say, hey, look, I'm getting my power from solar, from renewable resources, and that's a win for them.
Xcel Energy also announced plans this week to expand its solar production capacity. Xcel is out to create what they claim will be Wisconsin's largest community solar garden program. It includes new solar gardens in La Crosse and Eau Claire counties and will provide Xcel customers more chances to invest in solar production. This week's announcements underscore the timeliness of our conversation today as we explore this growth in community solar gardens, clearly a growing trend among power companies who are building large arrays of solar panels and encouraging individuals and other businesses to sponsor one or more panels to offset their electric costs. Joining us today to talk about how these projects are good for the environment and the economy are Joe McDonald, CEO of Vernon Electric Cooperative, Jason Willett, Assistant General Manager for Finance and Sustainability from Minnesota's Metropolitan Council, and Lisa Hare, Executive Director of the Seven Rivers Alliance. You know, in the past few years, we've seen several solar projects pop up in this region. You know, but are solar gardens kind of a new concept for solar energy? Jason, you want to jump in?
Sure. Solar certainly is taking off in the metropolitan Minnesota area. A number of factors are responsible for that. There have been some law changes. There have been a lot more improvements in the cost of solar power. And just, I think, acceptance that we need to do some of this to improve the greenhouse gas footprint of our energy production. Community solar gardens in Minnesota actually started with a law change. I think it was 2013. Took about a year for the rules to be put in place. Xcel Energy, which represents their service territory as much of the metropolitan area and some other areas in Minnesota as well, is required actually to allow community solar gardens. And the other utilities are allowed to do them, so they have a little more flexibility. But many of the co-ops and other utilities, the munis, are doing some form of community solar garden. So we do some of the regular solar facilities, and other people, of course, too, on their roofs or on their land, and they're wired into their own house or business, in our case, wastewater treatment plants. But community solar gardens are not. And really, the way this started, I don't know if I'm overgeneralizing here, but I think of it sort of as related to CSA, you know, an organic farm where you buy a share of the produce that's produced. So in a community solar garden, you buy a share of the electric energy that's produced. And originally, it was thought, well, you know, only about 25% of houses are very good for solar to be put on the roof because they're shaded or they're not south-facing or the angle's wrong, it's not optimal. And wouldn't it be better to put this someplace where we could get an economy of scale in building it and professional management? So essentially what community solar gardens do, like the community-supported or shared agriculture, they allow you to buy into that. And in the original concept, people were buying, you know, panels. So you'd buy a panel, and then you'd get credit for the production. And the utilities, at least in Minnesota, are required to give you credit for that on your bill as if it was on your house, right? So that's the concept, then, is that you can buy that in Minnesota, a lot of the more recent community solar gardens have gone sort of one step further than that. Instead of actually buying the panels up front, we are able to just pay the vendor for our share of the production that we subscribe to. We pay them on a per kilowatt hour. In other words, for the electricity that we're going to get credited for. So it's completely separate from the normal electricity we buy from the utility. We have to make a payment to the solar vendor, but then we get a credit from our utility on our bill.
Joe, Vernon Electric Cooperative was the first community solar garden in Wisconsin, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, so are you seeing similar things here in Wisconsin as these kind of projects take shape?
We are. We've seen a lot of interest in community solar, especially in the rural area. Wisconsin has 25 electric cooperatives, and they've kind of taken the initiative to develop them. We were the first, and until about a month ago, we're the largest in Wisconsin. Eau Claire Energy in Eau Claire actually has a little bigger one than us now. But a lot of the co-ops are waiting to see how we did. We did use economies of scale. So we built a 1,000 panel community solar. We sold out in about 2.5 weeks. Each panel was $600. And it's been very successful. We use it as a learning opportunity for our members. You have to be a member of Vernon Electric Cooperative to buy a panel. And then we used the traditional model of the members bought the panel, and they get a credit every month on their electric bill.
And you said, you know, we're seeing more of these projects kind of pop up in western Wisconsin. Why do you think that this region is, you know, it has so much interest in these kinds of projects?
Well, I think it just the environment we live in. People want to have green energy, but they don't want to invest a lot of money, or they don't have southern exposure. So for us, we just had a lot of members bought one or two panels just to say that they own solar panels. And then they have no maintenance, and they don't have to mow around them or put them on their roof. And it's been very popular.
And I definitely want to get back into talking about some of those things that come along with, you know, investing in community projects versus your own projects. But, you know, Lisa, the Seven Rivers Alliance is hosting a summit on community solar gardens. What kind of made you guys want to host this conversation in this area?
As we've been exploring the topics of interest to business and community leaders throughout the region that we cover, we discovered more and more interest in looking at solar gardens, parks, and farms as an option. And a lot of executives asking questions about where do they begin, who do they talk to, how do they make connections with either a local power cooperative, or if they have a power utility such as XL that they are serviced by, how do they begin that conversation? And one of the big questions that I'm often asked is, how do I ensure that this is going to be a cost-effective endeavor? Historically, people have gone into solar, and I mean that historically over the last 10, 20 years, and I had a gentleman call me who had been in solar in the 70s and talking about how much things have changed and how people really had a passion and a commitment for solar at that time because it wasn't cost effective. You were making a statement about trying to reduce your carbon footprint. Now the game has changed and the cost and efficiencies have been achieved to allow more people to participate. And so this event on March 1st is really designed to connect those people with the resources and assets that they need to get those questions answered.
And Jason, let's talk a little bit about the cost effectiveness of solar. What are you looking at over in Minnesota as far as, you know, cost effectiveness of solar and why these are good investments?
So the overall cost of a smaller business or residential is probably 50% or so what it was in 1987. So there's been a huge reduction. been lots of changes in incentives, both federal and state. And there's a website people can check. I don't have that handy on me, but I'm sure we could get it that tells all of the different state incentives and rules that relate to these kinds of things. It is true that solar panels, even not community solar, regular ones, take very little maintenance. Inverters might wear out over a 20-year period, which are the machines that change the power from DC to AC, but the panels have no moving parts on them. So some people will say they're good for 40 years. I don't know if that's true, but there are some pretty old ones that are still out there making power. So there's a lot of things that have changed that have made solar costs get much more economical. And in Minnesota, we've actually had one private company propose this into Excel RFP for any kind of power, and they won. This was Geronimo, based on all factors. The Minnesota Department of Commerce did a long study of all of the value of solar, and there are some things that are surprising. You know, if you think about it, wind is pretty economical now, too, but wind produces mostly at night, not during the day, and when the utilities really need power, they need it. Most of the utilities that have a lot of business use and residential are going to peak late in the afternoon on hot days when everybody has their air conditioning on, so that power is actually more valuable to them. I'm not sure that's true for a co-op that would have really overwhelmingly residential, but at least in our area, that's true. So that power is worth more to them. One of the rule changes we got was a credit against standby charges for the fact that solar does produce when it's most needed. There are also some other grid benefits to solar power. If you think about energy security, you know, having power distributed all over the place means if one or two of these go down, it's not really a big of a risk as if you had a big nuclear or coal plant and there was an interruption. It's a huge percentage of the load. It makes a big difference. The operations have no emissions, right? And so that's not just greenhouse gas climate change emissions, which, of course, we should all be concerned about. But in the metro area, we are very concerned about soot, smog, ground-level ozone. Those are things that have billions of dollars of health costs for people, which come from burning things. So it would be great if we could make more and more of our power from clean sources. Solar power doesn't use any water for cooling. And while we still have abundant water in this region, I mean, you can't count on that indefinitely in the future if we're not being careful about it. Besides the obvious rate comparison, when you enter into one of these solar contracts, oftentimes we can get a fixed price for 25 years. So we can take a significant part of our costs and freeze it. So we have that part of our operating cost stabilized. If you want, you can get it with a, you know, an escalator, but known based, or a lot of the contracts we've entered into have just a flat fee for 25 years. So we come close, sometimes a little bit positive, sometimes a little negative in the cash flow for the first 2 or 3 years. But then after that, as utility costs continue to go up, and ours are going up 2.5-3% a year on the average, we're going to have more and more actual savings from this. So there's really quite a difference now in what's possible with solar. We're seeing an explosion of requests to the point where Xcel is quite backed up in their interconnection approval process.
That's Jason Willett, Assistant General Manager for Finance and Sustainability for Minnesota's Metropolitan Council, here with us today to talk about community solar gardens. Also joining our conversation is Lisa Hare, Executive Director of the Seven Rivers Alliance, and Joe McDonald, CEO of Vernon Electric Cooperative. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Joe, earlier you brought up some of the benefits of investing in a community solar project rather than, you know, putting solar panels on your house or having a personal project is lack of maintenance costs. I mean, that seems like a simple thing, but from my perspective, maybe makes this a little bit more accessible.
Well, that was one of the key points, but I really think the key point was getting it affordable as prices of panels have come down. As Jason alluded to, we used economies of scale and partnered when Daryl and Power Cooperative built their array, we're able to piggyback on that for prices. So economies of scale was very important. I think our members really looked at the payback. It was 12 to 13 years. At $600, it was affordable. And I think the real key is the price point. There are some community solars out there for $800 a panel, and they're not selling out. So there is that sweet spot of, I think, $600 to $750. And it does have to make financial sense to a lot of people before they'll invest. So that was our goal, to make it financial sense. Some people looked at it as a rate of return. They were getting 1% interest in the bank on a CD. I can look at this. I can invest $600, get $36 a year credit on my bill. And if rates go up, electric rates go up, my solar panel will escalate too. So they, several people just looked at it as strictly as an investment type. But it's gone really well. It's performed very much like we thought. As Jason said, it does hit our peak just a little bit. We're very rural. So we peak when people come home, turn the air conditioners on, and our farmers are starting to do the chores and milk cows. So we peak pretty much equally in January as we do in July. So it has some benefit, but not as much benefit as we probably thought, because solar is a little unpredictable, especially if you get a cloudy day and it's 100 degrees. You don't, doesn't help us as much.
And Lisa, one thing that I thought of as more of these projects are being built, you know, is this developing kind of a business in itself for installation or even developing these kinds of technologies?
Yes, we've received numerous calls from the public about this event as to whether they could attend, and the answer is definitely yes. We have individuals who may have had an extensive career in construction or a construction-related trade who are now looking at getting into solar installations as a new career opportunity, and so I expect to have a number of those individuals in our audience as well at this event. And hopefully they can start to build those relationships with the power cooperatives and the utilities, as well as other peers from the business, and learn about it. It is exciting to explore the possibility of something that actually gives people more access to supporting alternative energy. And I really like the idea of a price point that is reasonable for people to make a difference, because a personal investment on your building your own array like Jason did on his house is great. I'm just not sure everybody has that commitment on a financial level.
Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on the future of solar projects in the Cooley region. Joining us today is Joe McDonald, CEO of Vernon Electric Cooperative, Jason Willett, Assistant General Manager for Finance and Sustainability for Minnesota's Metropolitan Council, and Lisa Hare, Executive Director of the Seven Rivers Alliance. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find a link to the Seven Rivers Alliance Community Solar Garden Summit. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about community solar gardens, a collaborative approach to increasing the use of solar energy. Many power companies in the Cooley region have created solar arrays, with each panel sponsored by an individual or business in the community hoping to offset their electric costs. And recent regulations and incentive programs have made these solar projects more attractive to businesses and communities. Joining us is Joe McDonald, CEO of Vernon Electric Cooperative, Jason Willett, Assistant Assistant General Manager for Finance and Sustainability for Minnesota's Metropolitan Council, and Lisa Hare, Executive Director of the Seven Rivers Alliance. And Jason, I know that you've been involved in a few projects over in Minnesota that are more public projects, and I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that and how that's a little different than maybe some other community solar gardens on this side of the river.
A financial transaction sort of separate from the power that we buy. And the at three of our wastewater treatment plants we are developing now, none of them are built, but community solar gardens in what I would call the buffer land. And as you might imagine, we actually own and operate 8 wastewater treatment plants, and some of them have a lot of this buffer land. If it looks like there's land that we're not going to need for 25 or 30 years, we still don't really want any sort of activity there that involves people with noses, because every once in a while, whether justified or not, they'll think that they're smelling something from the wastewater plant. Solar panels, on the other hand, have no noses, so they make good neighbors for us. Plus, we have a lot of load, so we need the energy. So we are developing, in these cases, the community solar gardens. They'll be attached, wired to the grid, if you will, to the utilities power. The state law in Minnesota requires a minimum of 5 subscribers for every community solar garden, most of which are 1 megawatt. There was a period of time where we could go up to 5 of them co-located in the same area. So 2 of our plants actually are larger, which means even more economy of scale. But we still need to have 5 subscribers. The Metropolitan Council, in addition to one running the wastewater treatment system, also runs the Metropolitan Transit System, another big electricity user, and they are seen as a separate retail subscriber. So we can actually be 2 subscribers, but we still need 3. So what we did was we invited all the local governments that are served by the wastewater plants to see if they wanted to participate. And in this case, because we were sort of offering the land for free to this development, and that they were, some of them had this good economy of scale I mentioned, their pricing was really quite good. So we quickly got local governments to participate and join us in that. So they're all fully subscribed by governmental entities. The perhaps even more interesting, after the low-hanging fruit of our wastewater treatment plant bufferland, we said, well, we're actually one of Xcel's larger customers in Minnesota, one of the top 10, and we have a lot more appetite for this, doing all these good things for the environment and regional jobs, and we can make money for our ratepayers. We should see if we can do some more of this. So with partners, Metropolitan Surge, Great Plains, Hennepin and Ramsey County and the city of Minneapolis, we organized a collaborative. The council actually sent out an RFP for 31 governmental subscribers, which could potentially, the demand, if everything had worked out, was up to 185 megawatts of demand. So it's actually like utility scale power, although this would be located, you know, at many, many different locations all around the metropolitan area. We got 5 proposals in over the summer. We ended up with somewhat difficult negotiations. A lot of these developers are fairly new, and in order for them to realize the full 30% investment tax credit and accelerated depreciation that federal law allows, they needed to get financing from a banker or some other partner. So there were a lot of parties involved in this. Essentially, it was all of the community solar gardens that we were doing are public-private partnership, but in this case, all of the subscribers were other governments. So we're actually still sorting that out. We're in a 30-day period where all of the governments get to say yes or no to the contracts that we've negotiated. I'm not aware of anybody anywhere that has done anything quite like that. There were savings. Just because it was large, we think we attracted good developers and hopefully negotiated better contracts than governments would have gotten on their own. So we'll see. The communities all had to agree to the process, and they don't get to individually negotiate. Governments, as you may know, have fairly strict procurement rules, and so we have to follow those procedures. Everybody agreed to that in advance. They do get to say yes or no once they've looked at the risks and the savings. There is an opportunity cost for them because if they subscribe to this, they can't subscribe to others. And in the metro area here, a lot of the local governments are having unsolicited offers put on their desks by the solar vendors now. It's that popular. So they have to choose which to do. But in all cases, these offers that we put on the table in our analysis, which means you have to make some assumptions about what rates are going to be in the future, but they all appear to have net present value savings, which means over the life cycle, in today's dollars, we would expect that we will get more money in the bill credits than we would pay to the solar developers. So it's that interesting. And if I may, I'll just go over again some of the other reasons why I think that governments should pay attention to solar. Of course, savings money for a rate and taxpayer is a big thing. But don't forget reducing carbon and other air emissions that impact our health, conserving the fossil fuels because we may need them for other things or our children or grandchildren will, jobs and tax base creation, postponing the need for electric utility expansion, you know, because the solar is instead of that. Solar avoids any solid waste that you'd have from conventional energy generation. In Minnesota, we have no fossil fuels, and I think I've heard the state say we pay about $18 billion a year for electricity to be imported from, or the fuels for electricity to be imported from elsewhere. We do have sun and wind and biomass, so it's great if we can start to take advantage, and that's what we're really seeing, potential explosion of that here in Minnesota.
And Lisa, I know you said that, you know, you've seen some local interest in some of these, you know, different kinds of projects. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It's something that has caught the attention of county board supervisors in a number of our counties. And so we actually have small teams coming to our event because they're grappling with how do they begin to have these conversations at the county level and who do they include, where would they potentially secure the land? Is it land that the county already owns? Is it land available through a utility or a private party? And so trying to figure out understanding, I think there's a increase in understanding of the benefit. But now the question is, where do they begin and who do they talk to?
And Joe, do you want to talk a little bit about kind of where Vernon Electric's solar garden is situated?
It is situated just outside of Westby, Wisconsin on Highway 27. About 30 miles south of La Crosse, so it's an easy drive, pretty drive, Norwegian country. I think we lost count of how many tours we have given. We have worked with UW-Platteville's class on sustainability, and we've had everyone from kindergartners to college students come in. We've had a lot of interest lately from government agencies and towns coming in and looking at our project. So it's been very popular.
So definitely a different scene than in the more of the metropolitan area. But, you know, is it a concern that these, you know, large solar panels would be taking up farmland, or is the, you know, kind of the return on that land kind of worth it at the end?
Well, that is a concern, and you do hear about it. For us, we're lucky because we're able to put it on some of our hillsides, so we didn't have to take any of our land, farmland that we are renting. But it does, like a 1 megawatt may take 10, 12 acres, so it could use some farmland.
Yeah, and Lisa?
I would suggest that counties and communities that are looking at this also look at properties that they may have that are abandoned, brownfield projects. I really like Jason's idea of the wastewater treatment facilities. And so it's really thinking outside of the box. It doesn't have to be pristine land to be conducive for solar.
Transportation routes, too. We've talked about trying to continue to get the utility here to allow co-location in those sort of marginal lands that don't have a lot of other uses. So buffer lands, even around, you know, traditional electric generation makes sense to me. A lot of possibilities that don't require using good farmland.
We actually had to do a little redesign on our initial project, and we went with lower profile panels just so our neighbors wouldn't be looking at the back of them. So that was just one thing you don't think of, but people that really don't want to look at panels either. So that's one thing we realized.
But they might be a little bit subtler than maybe, you know, a windmill, though. I think that you also hear about neighbors, you know, being concerned with the location of windmills and wind power. So do you think solar power kind of has a benefit of being a little bit subtler?
I think it's a lot subtler. Our zoning was very easy. We worked with a town and a city because we were in right on the jurisdiction of both, and they're very supportive of it, where if you would have put a wind turbine, there would have been a lot of complaints. So they're very quiet. And we actually use sheep to keep the grass down, so that's been very popular and very environmentally friendly, and I think more people stop to see the sheep than they do the panels.
I think the local government zoning ordinance issue is something that local governments will have to face, whether or not they want to own or subscribe to community solar gardens. And there are a lot of issues with not shading other people's solar panels, as well as just the sort of general nuisance factor. So there are organizations that will help with model ordinances, because that is going to become an issue as this becomes more and more prevalent.
And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. We've been talking with Joe McDonald, CEO of Vernon Electric Cooperative, Jason Willett, Assistant General Manager for Finance and Sustainability for Minnesota's Metropolitan Council, and Lisa Hare, Executive Director of the Seven Rivers Alliance, about the environmental and economic benefits of community solar gardens. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find a link to the Seven Rivers Alliance Community Solar Garden Summit. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.